Okay, the work meeting for the Morgan Board of Education is called to order, and we'll excuse Member Wallace for a few minutes. She'll just pop in just a few minutes. She's still in the meeting. And we roll in. So let's begin by welcoming and thanking our middle school principals, Principal Jarvie and Principal Morrell, to share with us this afternoon some benchmark data and RTI information from their schools. We looked at elementaries last month, and so we'll take a look at the middle school today and ask any questions that you might have as we go along. Is that fine with you guys if we just do questions as we go?
You bet.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't you turn on the microphone, if you will, and then jump right in.
Thank you for having us. We're going to shoot for being finished by 4:30, so I guess we'll get through on your other items. It's been really fun to work with Ms. Jarvie on this project. We are doing it different this year, which I appreciate. It's really nice to have some time and some direction with what you guys are looking for. So today we're going to talk a lot about benchmarks and about how we're utilizing RTI or intervention. We both wanted to start out with just looking at direct data from last year with RISE. We were able to come up with a couple of positives that we're seeing at our schools and a couple of areas that need some attention. So for Morgan Middle School, we looked at 7th and 8th grade math are well above state average. If you notice, last year our 7th grade math was 62%, while the state average was 4-6. 8th grade, same thing, 59-39. So we felt like, okay, we're feeling good about math. Going down, 5th and 6th grade math were both identified as areas that need more support, that we really need to take an in-depth look at what's happening with 5th and 6th grade math, because you can see that we're below state average last year. 35, state average was 44, 32, and 36. Looking over at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science and ELA scores, they're all above state average. And we wanted to bring up something. 3 years ago, we implemented READ 180 as our Tier 2 intervention target for reading, and it's had huge factors. Right now, we have our 8th grade class. There are only 3 students left who started in READ 180 in 5th grade. In 5th grade, we had 25 students who fell at least 2 grade levels below. We're now at 3. So our reading intervention is working. We really want to focus this year and next year on our 5th grade, looking at our benchmarks and our scores. We've really struggled with only having feeling like we focus so much on RISE, and that's end of level, it's in May, you know, we get our scores, well then next year the teachers don't even have those students. So yes, we can do some vertical instruction planning, but it's really nice to be able to look at different benchmarks. So this year, Morgan Middle, we adopted an NWEA program, and they use MAP Growth. There's MAP Growth for science, math, and reading. We chose to just go with reading and math because that's been our focus. We started this in September, so we have a benchmark in September. We have one in December. We have our next benchmark in April. We also have been able to look more in depth at our common formative assessments that all of our teachers are doing. They're aligning those with RISE expectations and making sure that really what assessments they're putting out to students are matching what RISE is asking. We spent a lot of time doing that this year. So start with our first benchmark with math. If you look overall at Morgan Middle, our math achievement, we want that green number on the left. We want that at the end of the year to be at 70%. So right now we're green, we're at 62, and NWA would say you're right where you need to be. You're approaching that 70% mark, that proficiency. But it allowed us to really look in depth. So we pulled up all of our grade levels for math. And right away, you just noticed a glaring discrepancy. If you look 5th and 6th grade, they're both yellow, and we really need them to be green. So right now, this was from winter, so December, our fifth and sixth grade math are both, they're not at that green level. They're not set to achieve that proficiency. Seventh and eighth grade, they're right on target. Especially eighth grade right now, I'm feeling really good about our eighth graders. They're above, they're about 71%. Seventh grade, I feel like they're gonna be fine. Again, that fifth and sixth grade has been pretty glaring. Let's look at this. So math growth puts it into quadrants for you. You really want all of your class, all of your grades to be in that upper right quadrant. Upper right means that they're growing and that they're on pace to pass, to be proficient, that they're right where you want them to be. Obviously, you're going to have outliers, right? Not every student in our school is up here. We have a bunch down here. But this is looking as a grade, like as a whole. Right away, we noticed that we had a grade level in the bottom lower quadrant, meaning they're not growing and they're not on pace to pass. They're not on pace to be proficient. We identified this as the fifth grade math. We immediately broke down the test. We met with the fifth grade team, with the coaches and admin and the team. And I used Ms. Jarvie's language. I really liked what she said. She just said, it's really hard. Teachers are sensitive and, you know, they feel like, oh, I'm a crappy teacher or something. But we wanted them to feel like, no, you're supported and we just want you to get curious about this data and see why. It was really interesting to watch when we sat down and got curious with the fifth grade team. They were able to identify, talking with the teachers, they said, well, immediately we noticed about 50% of the questions, we haven't even covered that yet. It was geometry and we haven't got there. And then several questions were actually part of sixth grade standards. So it really all made better sense to them. And now they know they better hit geometry right now because they know it's going to be on there again in April. So they've adjusted their instruction. And again, when we only use RISE, it's hard to adjust your instruction right away, right? I mean, you can use the benchmarks in RISE, but this has been a much better tool. If you look at our school reading, so this is reading, the first one was math, reading. Again, as a whole, you're like, okay, we're in the green, I think we're doing fine. We break it down again. Notice eighth grade, they're green in everything. So I'm not too worried about the eighth grade. Looking at seventh grade, they're projected to be on proficient. Sixth grade, we're looking at this bottom achievement in the fall. The sixth grade reading, they were at 45. They jumped clear to 61. So now they're looking at what did they do different to see that jump. And then reading as a whole, our whole school, we're green. Math, we were not green. Reading, we're green. So that's where we came up with. We've decided that this year and next year, we're really going to put more of a focus in math. We focused in reading the last 3 years. I feel like we're on a good pace there. We want to put more effort into math and do a lot of the same things in math that we've been doing in reading. One tool we've been using is trying to make students more accountable. I was surprised at parents nor students really knew where they were at until we started mandating that teachers have little private meetings after every math growth. And it's like a 30-second meeting, but the teacher will call the student up. And let's say that it's this student here. Even though the student is in the red, meaning they're not proficient, they show growth. And so the teacher would have a conversation with the student and say, look, you grew by 8 points. That's amazing. I just want effort. I think you can do this. Let's get it. Let's hit that to 185 next time and set some small goals with every student. Even these students that are already in the blue, meaning they're above grade level, they too set goals. And it's like, let's celebrate that you're above grade level, but set some goals. We're really trying to have more student accountability instead of just teachers begging kids, you know, to try. Just when students know that teachers are watching and are celebrating growth, I feel like you get a lot more effort. So Morgan Middle School, our focus right now is math. We've introduced a Tier 2 math intervention program called Reflex. It focuses on basic multiplication facts, because 5th and 6th grade teachers were saying kids don't know their facts, so it's really hard to teach, you know, these complex problems when they don't know their facts. And then I meet with Ms. Wilkinson from the elementary, and she's like, yeah, we're doing facts. They don't leave 3rd grade without facts. But that information has helped her. Now she's like, you know what? We're going to focus a little bit more in 4th grade. Maybe we can help that transition better. So it's been really good to have some vertical alignment with the other schools. Right now, we have an instructional aide in every 7th and 8th grade math class. And our math scores, if you've noticed from last year, our math scores have jumped. I think who you have is a key. We currently have Casey Straub. I'm not sure if you know her. She is really, really good at math and loves helping kids. She's been instrumental in just helping kids to be retaught or giving them a little extra enduring intervention. The other thing we're doing is having very frequent, intentional data reviews with each team. It's so time-consuming. You just think like, oh, that would be a fast process, but just meeting with 5th grade math, we met like 2 hours and we were just getting into it. So we're just trying to provide the teachers with some more time to do that. You guys probably already know that we're excited to have a school within a school. It'll be the first time that we feel that our building can physically sustain a school within a school is next year. Our 5th grade will be moving to the old seminary building. This is going to allow us to stop sharing teachers. We can be on a different bell schedule. And again, working with Ms. Martin and Ms. Wilkinson, they've helped me to really look at what an elementary model should look like. So next year, every 5th grader will have 90 minutes of math instruction, a recess, 90 minutes of ELA instruction. We're also moving to a common material or common curriculum for reading, so that all teachers will be teaching the same material. And we're aligning that with Morgan Elementary as well. They're using magnetic reading. We're going to adopt that. They're using Eureka. We've adopted that. I'm just really excited to see, because I feel like everybody's bought in, and now it's just going to be a matter of setting it up and giving the teachers the support they need. We're going to get an instructional aide dedicated just to 5th grade. That's what our community council is really pushing for, is they want an aide to be at 5th grade. So that's my 10 minutes. Do you guys have questions for me?
What's the name of that assessment that you're using again?
It's called Map Growth. So the big company is NWEA. And a lot of districts are using that. Tara's telling me that she's looked at some other districts as well. Yeah, I really liked it. And I like it because it's giving us data 3 times in a year. So teachers can adjust and go like, oh, wow, we thought we had the standard, but we don't. So they can adjust instead of looking at RISE. And
how similar or different is it to like a cadence?
I'm not sure about
different
that.
Purposes. So your cadence will be really applicable, like phonics skills, decoding skills, fluency
skills.
Sorry,
I meant in math.
No, you're good, and me too. So yeah, so, oh, in math.
Yeah.
In math, the difference in a cadence. A cadence is really computation-based because it's for the lower grades. It's like K-3. And so we get into more story problems and analysis and like those kinds of things, multi-step. So it kind of is the next step in that. Acadians has had some higher level math tests, but I haven't heard great things about them yet, honestly, about math specifically. Their reading assessments are great.
Any other questions? Sorry, I just didn't stop talking. I just went on.
There was one. That's okay. Oh, are they using, you said they are utilizing the benchmark?
Mm-hmm. We're using benchmarks as well for RISE. It's that balance of over assessment.
Yeah.
Assessment.
Well, they've shortened the math, which is nice, because
yeah.
Now they're like 5 questions, but the ELA best benchmarks, they're still a beast. So.
Okay, if questions come up, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
And I'll follow a lot the same format, but I'm just going to talk you through a couple of different things. Benchmarks, what they are. I know we have educators in the room as well, but benchmarks are checkpoints. So our teachers have curriculum that sometimes have assessments written for them, and sometimes they're writing their own assessments. And benchmarks provide us an opportunity to step outside of our team and our knowledge base and see if we're hitting rigor. So we can think we're getting it and our students are scoring 80, 90%, 100% on these assessments. And then when we take this test, an outside measure that's written by experts that kind of norm things nationally, we can see if we're hitting the mark or not, right? And if we are in fact growing as our data indicates, or if our tests are saying our kids are at 70%, but they're actually really there. So at least we know our assessments are good and we can adjust our practices. So these benchmarks are really good checkpoints for us. Always, I start with data. I'm a data person and I'm a math teacher. And Michelle and I have talked about this a little bit. When we look at data, the instinct, if you look at this data, our eyes drawn to the things that we see as mistakes. We're kind of trained that, right? We look over things and we're like, oh, where's the problem? So that's why curiosity is really big for me. And so I'm going to ask you if you notice anything about our data.
A little bit. 23 was a lot higher than 24 in ELA.
In that fifth grade, for yeah. Sure. The 24 fifth grade team struggled last year. Our data did go down a bit. So who did well?
Eighth grade.
Eighth grade did well. Do I have a subject area?
Sixth grade math.
Sixth grade math, yes. Which is actually remarkable because the growth score to stay proficient jumps quite significantly between fifth and sixth grade. So that's actually really awesome. A content area that seems to have it figured out. Science is a strength of ours for sure. And so one of the things that we find in our data is not only the places where we have weakness and opportunities for growth, but we find the experts in our building. We find the people that are doing things already that have shown to be successful for our population. And there's so many resources out there that can help us with our students. And we sometimes overlook the ones in our building that have actually figured it out, and we have evidence that they have, right? So just some of the things that we noted, the drop from fourth to fifth, and I have that on a different data sheet, and even the drop in. So these are same students, and this is just grade level team, right? So our seventh grade English was a consistent drop. Our science is pretty good, but in seventh grade we had a drop there as well. And we stayed above average in every subject, but we did not meet our goals. And so that was something that we talked about as a team. So we give an assessment that is different as a benchmark, and it was decided before I got here. And it's called iReady. And it's supposed to be nationally normed as well, and it gives us some of the same data points. So in our reading, when we took it in the fall, in fifth grade, we had 43% proficient and we went to 47. That's a data point that we'll pay attention to. In sixth grade reading, we were up to 62 proficient from 47, and we went from 53 to 57 and 48 to 55. So our proficiencies are growing. The other thing that you really want to see on this data is your kids that are struggling the most have some movement there. Fifth grade is, we'll talk about that. So we did see some movement from these two columns into the blue column, right? That's what we're looking at as they continue to trickle across. Sometimes this will stay consistent because the kids move to here and from here, right? So that middle one is the one that's harder to move a little bit. So these are some of the things that we noticed. Our fifth grade team decided to give the assessment, the math and the reading assessment, in the same day. And it was awesome, and it also was a little hard on our data. So we learned some things about that from our reading. This is the results. This is what our results look like in the program that we have. Just the differences between, we went from 15% in this highest category to 22. This is for our reading assessment. So the movement there, we look at those different subgroups, who's moving, who's not moving, and our math scores. Same thing. So we have pretty good movement, except for in our fifth grade class. We've really focused on rigor in our fifth grade class, and we've adjusted some of our curriculum. And this is where conversations happen. So as we get this data, we sit down as a team and we say, okay, what is this telling us and what do we need to look at? And that's when I reach out to Michelle and I reach out to Ms. Martin, and she tells me what her program is and the success that she's seen. We right now have a program that we've adopted that isn't connecting to our sixth grade team or our fourth grade team. So that's really hard for kids to switch curriculum every year. So we've reached out and we're going to remedy that. They're working on finding the curriculum that either matches better with our sixth grade team or connecting to our elementary, because that can be some of the things that we're seeing here. So this is our math data, just across grade levels. Our eighth grade, sixth and eighth grade math are doing so great as well. This is a report that you saw. Michelle had one similar on her program. This is ours. So our fifth grade, we took the math test first, so they were about right here. But as we go this way, we talk about, let's see, how well they did is on this scale. So our kids are in the upper range of how well they did. And then the up and down is growth. So the amount of growth. Our sixth and eighth graders are making a tremendous amount of growth, as well as our seventh, and our fifth is right there in between. They're performing pretty good, but we'd like to see them make a lot more growth. The reading assessment, sixth and eighth grade have implemented some new things with Common Lit, is a program that we use that's research-based. Our seventh grade teacher, after seeing this data, is now meeting with them and working on pulling that curriculum in and hitting some rigor. It appears to be something that we're seeing a lot of success with, so she's been working with that team pretty closely since then. And our fifth grade, we really believe it's testing fatigue because it was the end of the day, so we're tracking that in other ways with some of their other assessments, but we're working on that right now. Okay, do you have any questions for me on that? So as we've met this year, and as Michelle and I have talked, and her instructional coaches come up and share with our team, we try to connect as much as we can. Our guiding coalition has looked at NWEA, and we would like to get on the same page so that our data is more consistent, so that we can have conversations, so that we can measure things in with a common scale to help us guide our practices. So we'll be working on that as the year ends, kind of moving to a different assessment. As I worked with my team on this, they weren't exactly sure how we adopted it. And so I said, let's look through how we can adopt one and find one that we think will serve us best. Each of these programs, and I know Michelle's does this as well, has an individual student report. We meet with parents with these on parent-teacher conferences. We go over this data and talk to them about the growth, not just the grade, because we want to focus on learning. And so this is a report that we use to have those conversations. Benchmarks, it helps us know where the students are at. It helps us get feedback on where we're at as a team, where our assessments are at. Do our assessment scores match the outcomes here? And it tells us if we need to change some things there. And it also helps us identify students that need extra support. So if we have a student that is making a little amount of growth and from one to the other, and we're seeing that across the board, it helps us know that they need some interventions. If we haven't already identified them, and if we have and they're receiving interventions and still not making growth, we need to make more adjustments. So it helps guide our interventions. And we did say we'd talk about intervention a bit today, so I'm gonna move on to that a little bit about our intervention system and what we use that data for. Have you heard of RTI, Response to Intervention?
Yes.
So we talk about it in a diamond, because tier one is what every student in our school gets access to. Tier two is that extra time and support for people that need extensions because they're above grade level, and our students that are struggling and need a little extra support need that other tier two, and then we have intensive support on tier three with some of our honors classes and some of our, we did not have a reading intervention program until this year. I called Michelle and said, tell me, where are we at with that? And so we adopted that second trimester. We're starting to see results already, and we're excited to follow her lead on that. So our intervention time, we have a product that we use to help us track that. It's called RTI Scheduler. And this is just a snapshot of what we're doing during intervention time. Our students have attended 35 hours of intervention time this year so far. They have intervention time Monday through Thursday for 30 minutes a day. And in that, no type set is something we're working on. but intervention minutes, enrichment minutes, these are the breakdown of the categories. Our intervention aides that work on work completion don't mark the category, and we're working on that. But they've had additional CCA time, English Language Arts 8, Math 8. So these are the minutes that they're getting in addition to their class time to get extra support, either in enrichment or extension. And in our session types that we've had so far this year, 35% of them have been extensions and enrichment opportunities for students. 61% are intervention opportunities. and 3% are testing. The 2% that are clubs is our student council, and that's not best practice necessarily to put them during your intervention time, but there was a scheduling conflict, so we've worked that out this year. And so each of our departments, how it breaks down, fifth grade takes up a lot because theirs is broken down different, so they're kind of actually not part of this circle, but that's the time that we're spending with them. And this is just a portrait of what it looks like for two of those students. So if we were to pull up the report on their benchmark growth, one of these students, and it's kind of hard to see, so I'll read it to you. This is one of our students that needs intervention, that's scoring below grade level on both things. So we go to their RTI scheduler and see where they've been. They've had reteaches in math at least once a week, that they're getting pulled into small group to get help with those concepts. We see reteaching in writing often, and opportunities, extra opportunities in science to prepare for the test, and reteaching after the test that there was maybe a struggle on. So we check that. When we see our kids struggling, are they getting pulled? Are they getting noticed and getting those extra supports that they need? This is a student that actually needed a little help with some executive functioning, and we pulled them in a small group once a week and worked on that. And now this is their intervention time. They're working on, we don't go to J.A. Bistown in eighth grade, but we're going to start. And so we offered it as an extension opportunity for kids to go work on it in our eighth graders. And so he's joined that, he's part of that. He's been part of our mural design. He's learning the ukulele. We actually have a teacher that comes in and does that for us. He's learning about extra history things where we're working towards going to a geography bee next year. So she's implementing some of the things that we're going to offer for some of our accelerated learners. So when we see his test come in at the very top percentile, it makes me go to that step. Okay, are we continuing to grow this student in every way that we can? They're performing well in their classes, these students usually do. And so then how am I also giving them additional opportunities? So that's kind of where we go from the data to the individual students. And that is about all I have for you. So if you have any questions about that.
How much time again? How much time again you have built in that schedule for tier two intervention? Can you just repeat that again for the board?
We have 30 minutes, 4 days a week. And so that is an additional 2 hours. And it's really, it's been really awesome actually. We get a lot of really good feedback. We had a student that had moved to a charter school. Their parents contacted us and said, hey, we've heard you're doing this thing. It's called RTI time or something, and our daughter's friends are doing it, and she would like to re-enroll because we want her to have that opportunity. So the exciting parts of it are there, as well as making sure our kids get access to those opportunities.
Well, thank you so much. And could I just mention a couple of things that I noticed that you know, I picked up on this exciting to me, and one is really involving your students in knowing where they are and having that student buy-in for their own learning. That's huge, and thank you for doing that. And also, this is actually pretty phenomenal to be able to just pull up these individual records and that quickly see if somebody's actually doing that growing that you've expected. So, and just know that the board actually will support you in your goals that you're setting to see that grow. So thanks so much. And
yes,
thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be another 25 minutes before we start our regular board meeting. So if you want to go get a Coke, go for it.
Didn't you? You actually had two students come back from charter schools to your building because of this program and the other one you mentioned the other day.
Yeah, I actually had a parent tell me, we need them to have their grades suffer a little bit when they're gone. Can you not help them as much? Because we're trying to teach them a life lesson, as if you got it. I don't know how to do that because our system just reacts when we see a kid start to struggle, but I'll do my best.
Yeah, that's actually
it was awesome.
Funny.
Thanks.
Thank you. And I just have to say, we have the best team. We have our administrative team, and having each other to knock things off of, and then having your support is incredible. So thank you for all you do for us.
Thanks again. Let's move on to item number two and turn the time over to Board Member Brooks for a little bit of that follow-up from the Board of Directors meeting.
Yeah, I just wanted to share, I mean, because part of this is to make sure that I'm getting information back to you guys. So Scott is going to update us later on the session, but I just was going to say that, so with JLC, we ended up taking position on 95 bills. It was really interesting to just watch the process to go in there not even really knowing what JLC was. To, you know, 6 weeks later at the end, it was good. My watch told me Friday. My watch and my phone told me Friday, like, I was going to the Capitol. I'm like, actually, no, I'm not. So it's funny how 6 weeks we can create a habit. But they were back at the Capitol this year. I guess they haven't generally met there before. They've met, like, at Granite School District. And so it was really nice because senators and representatives would just run over. Like, literally, they would, like, run across the plaza, run up to our meeting, and take 5 or 10 minutes to answer questions. We had one that was like, what do I need to do? I do not want your red check mark on my bill because no one will look at it and vote for it if it's there. So it's interesting to have some of them come in, take questions, tell us, you know, why they were writing their bills the way they were, and of course, you know, Lexi's meeting with them regularly and the officers. But yeah, so it was a really great experience, and it'd be good to go over what Scott has for us and how that will affect our district. And then just some other things I wanted to share from our Board of Directors meeting. Richard presented his goals for us for the year, and those were professional development, master board certification, revising and updating the bylaws, public advocacy, legislative advocacy, and those are all that I have in my notes. I'm working on the NBC committee, and they're going to be moving that to Canvas and redeveloping that. So I don't know how long that's going to be down for, when that will be ready. But
okay, run that past me again. What
the
committee?
Master board certification? Oh. Sorry.
Yeah. Changing it again.
They're changing it again.
Again.
So if you look really anxious to jump on that and get it
well,
done,
we're
it's
really
not ready.
We're really glad that you're on that committee because you
so
will
you
keep
have
us
any suggestions?
All
let me know. And then just their areas of focus, you know, the services that they offer for us local boards. You know, just like Richard coming last year to help us with our superintendent evaluation and that, and professional development, like with our conferences and advocacy, like we'll have our dinner this Thursday to get updated on that. And so those are just some quick updates I have for you guys. If you have any questions or anything, just
well,
let me know.
Thank
as
you
we
for
have, like, you know, as we meet regularly and I have information, I'll work on disseminating that out, other than, you know, those Curtis does a good job with those Monday memos of just keeping
well,
things concise.
And that's kind of nice. Thank you for sending those out. It just gives us an idea of what's
going on.
Going on.
Yeah. But it's been interesting just to learn how more how, like, USBA works, the officers and their different roles, and all that is really put into that association.
I could be your next goal.
Thanks, Andrea. Anybody have any questions for?
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah,
it's a big
we appreciate
that
because it is a big time commitment.
Good. But what is the certification thing up?
I don't know. We have a couple of.
She really wants
I mean,
to get
I haven't
in there.
Lot, you
I
really want
to
do it. We're just meeting as the committee, like, over Zoom. And then in April, we're having another big meeting to work on it. And
isn't it typically annual? So it just needs to be completed in 2026.
Yeah, like just before December, right?
Yeah,
so
by December 1st or something like
well,
that.
Well, there's apparently higher versions, and I did the initial one 2 or 3 years in a row, not knowing that you're supposed to graduate.
Yeah, so I think now we're going to have two versions. We'll have a new board member one for your first year, and then, like, your second year, and up, like,
yeah,
be like.
And after 10, you don't have to do anymore?
No, I mean, you know, that's like for the really.
That would be my feedback.
That's the PhD.
For the computer system to advance you naturally.
That's
so
that's the PhD
for
certification.
Yeah.
After you get your master's 100 times.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have for you guys.
Thank you. For the computer system to advance you automatically,
yes,
and also
please
to actually record and keep record of what we've
would
done.
Would also be great. Because I would get back on, I'm like, I did that, and it's saying I did it, and then I get back on it, and it said I did, and then I'm like.
Yeah, I say the first year that happened, it was because it didn't record me. So I did it again. And then the second year, it was my fault. I just did it again.
Okay, let's jump into our board training. And always I'm open to feedback if there are things that any of you would like to train the board on, or if there are things that you feel like you'd like more information on. If you'll let me know ahead of time, we'll include that in our board training. But what I decided that would be a really good exercise would be for us to actually take a few minutes in our monthly work meetings and go through our Board of Education member handbook so that we actually know what's in there. And we've practiced and practiced, and I believe that every single one of us can name those parts of our will and our strategic plan. I memorized it by having two S's and then, you know, the other two. And every once in a while, I still have to say, okay, now, this S is that, what's that other S? But I really do feel like that that strategic plan has been a great guide and a great focus for us. Next month, we're going to be talking about board goals, and this strategic plan and the whole thing was meant to be kind of a five-year guide and then updated, and Superintendent Jensen and I have already had some conversations about how that 5 year is passing so rapidly, and so we'll be working on that again too. But if everybody that brought your handbook with you wants to turn, if you'll turn to page 5, we're going to start just kind of at the beginning, and then and we'll see how far we go today, but to actually read what's in here and then have an opportunity for questions or a discussion or whatever feels appropriate. So let's start with our code of ethics on page 5. And there are 15 of those and 5 of us, so we'll just each read 3. So we'll start with Member Brooks, if you'll read 3, and we'll just kind of go down the line. But if somebody comes to something that you want to give input in or you want to ask questions about, just stop us and we'll stop and discuss. So go ahead, if you will.
1, be an advocate of public education. 2, uphold and enforce constitutional laws, state board rules and regulations, and court orders pertaining to schools. 3, make decisions based on the educational welfare of children, striving for public schools that meet the individual needs of all students, regardless of their ability, race, sex, creed, or social standing.
Okay, any comments on any of those 3 or questions about those? Okay, Member Priest.
Collaborate with the board, staff, community, and students in ongoing study of the nature, value, and direction of education, facilitating needed changes in our schools. Help the community understand the importance of public education and the need to support it. Strive to ensure that the public is well informed about our schools and communicate the community's aspirations for its schools to the staff.
Number 7, recognize that the responsibility is not to run the schools directly, but in collaboration with fellow board members, ensure that they are run effectively. Number 8, to confine board action to policy making, planning, and evaluation. Number 9, arrive at conclusions after discussing issues thoroughly with fellow board members in meeting.
10, recognize that authority rests with the entire board when assembled in legally authorized meetings, and make no personal promises or take private actions that could compromise the board. 11, refuse to surrender independent judgment to special interests or partisan political groups, and refrain from using the schools for personal gain or the gain of friends. 12, hold matters pertaining to the schools in confidence.
13, vote to appoint the best trained technical and professional personnel available. Support and protect school personnel. This is 14, sorry. 14, support and protect school personnel in the proper performance of their duties. 15, refer complaints to the chief administrative officer and act on such complaints at legally authorized meetings only after an administrative solution has failed.
Perfect amount.
Yeah, that exactly worked out beautifully for us, didn't it? So is there anything of those 15 statements that we just read that you feel like we need any more discussion on, or you have thoughts one way or another? Because this is our handbook, this is our code of ethics. So again, if there's changes or things that you think about as the year progresses, jot notes in this. I mean, make it messy, and we look at this at the end of every year and revise and make it better and make changes. So anyway, that's where I wanted to start today. And then the next section actually talks about powers and duties of the board. And I'll read a couple, and then we'll just, again, go have each of you read a couple of these powers and duties that we have as a Board of Education. The first one is to promote education. The board has the legal power and duty to do all things necessary for the maintenance, prosperity, and success of the schools, and for the promotion of education, and to exercise all powers given by statute. The board's legal powers and duties include the actions set forth in this policy, but are not necessarily limited to the listed powers and duties, and then the Utah Code is listed under that. The second one there is govern. The Board of Education recognizes that under Utah law, it is the province of the Board of Education to determine what things are detrimental to the successful management, good order, and discipline of the schools, and the rules required to produce successful management, good order, and discipline in the schools. You know, and as I actually read through these and I think about our roles as board members, and I actually look at those and go through those quite often just to constantly remind myself. We're guardians, basically. That's the word that comes to my mind. We're guardians of the education of our most precious resource. And, you know, I think, speaking of that, we're all feeling the heaviness and the loss of one of our high school students. I think one reason that we are as good as we are is because it's personal, you know? We're invested. We care about kids, we care about our neighbors. And so it becomes guardians over a very professional, or a very personal but professional situation. And I just want you to know how much I really appreciate each of you and the roles that you feel in this board responsibility, because as we read, you know, a single board member has zero power or authority, but as we discuss and as we weigh things out and we listen to all sides, then we make the best decisions that we can. So thank you, and it's 10-2, and I want everybody to have a break. So I'll make a little note of where we kind of stopped, but you can sort of plan that we'll keep going this direction until we make it all the way through our handbook by the end of the year, hopefully, and then we'll start over with revisions.
There
are some cookies in sitting on Jenna's desk if you want to grab a little snack. And
I do.
We'll
really do.
And we'll see you back here in 10 minutes, and I just cannot wait for the reports of all the exciting things that happened last night and recently. If you want some cookies, go to the restaurant.